Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so the NFL is weird. And I say that because about a quarter of the starting quarterbacks are out with injuries, banged up. And it just so happens that a handful of these quarterbacks are on the Texans' schedule early in the year. Phillip Rivers is not one of them. He's going to play. However, the team around Phillip Rivers is banged up.
The Texans played Gardner Minshew when he was healthy.
That's true. And he might be the better quarterback in Jacksonville for all we know. And they're going to play him again in Week 9. But I say that because this Texans schedule, which we were essentially getting depressed drunk over during the months of July and August, has all of a sudden shaped up to where, Seth, if they win this game on Sunday, and they're three and a half point underdogs, which is a lower spread than we thought it would be at the beginning of the year. I think it's not. Phillip Rivers is still there, and usually a quarterback is the only individual player that's going to move a point spread like that, except when you get these gigantic clusters of injuries that the Chargers have. The Chargers' entire secondary is banged up right now. Melvin Gordon's holding out. Their left tackle is banged up. Their starting tight end is out right now for an extended period of time. So the Texans have a really good chance to go in there and finally get a big win like this during the Bill O'Brien era against an elite quarterback like Phillip Rivers. And if they win this game, they're 2-1. They'll be atop the AFC South. And their next six games, I think the only game they're not going to be favored in, if they keep winning, is the Kansas City game. They won't be favored at Kansas City. They'll be a healthy underdog to the Chiefs in Kansas City, barring something weird happening to Patrick Mahomes. But they're going to be favored against Carolina, with or without Cam Newton, in Week 4. They're going to be favored against Atlanta in Week 5. I think then they play Kansas City. I think if the Texans are 4-2 going into that Colts game in Indianapolis, and the Colts are 2-4 or 3-3, I think there's a chance the Texans are a small favorite at Indy. They play Oakland the following week at home, and then Jacksonville in London. I think there's a really good chance they're going to be favored in five of their next six games.
And we don't still quite know what Indianapolis is.
Right.
And the Chargers beat Indianapolis in Week 1. You never know what to make of Week
Overtime.
1 victories. Right. Yeah. So in this 8-8 league, as Bill O'Brien likes to say it, they sure do seem to be playing a whole bunch of 8-8 teams. So are the Texans at the very least slightly better than some of these 8-8 teams? And with the Chargers and the Texans in general, the thing that excites me, I don't know if excitement's even the right word. The thing that intrigues me about the Texans is I see avenues for improvement within the course of the season. Sometimes you look at a team and at the beginning of the season you think, okay, this is as good as this team's going to get.
They are.
And hopefully they don't get injured. With this team, there's some moving parts and some developmental players that I think could definitely get better as the season goes along. Obviously, the offensive line is one of them. Yeah. You've got two very young starters out there in Roderick Johnson and Titus Howard. At some point, you could have Max Sharping out there, although if things go well, not necessarily. So that can get better, and I was pleased with especially what I saw out of Titus Howard. Roderick Johnson, I've got some concerns about, especially this week. We'll find out a lot about Roderick Johnson this week.
Yes.
But that can get better as the season goes on.
Because of Bosa and Ingram.
Right. Yeah. Because the Chargers have some very good edge pass rushers. Yeah. So there's that. Defensively, some of the lesser names could end up being the biggest difference for the Texans. Because last year, what did we see? The Texans didn't really have enough pass rushers. They didn't have enough guys rushing the passer well, to where you felt like there were times where if they weren't blitzing, they weren't going to get pressure. I'm intrigued by Amenihu. I think Amenihu might end up being a huge X factor on passing downs especially. And Jacob Martin. Those two guys, in addition to J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus, those guys could be the tipping point. And you're facing a quarterback like Phillip Rivers. If those guys, if those extra guys, those younger kind of unknown guys can provide a pass rushing presence, and DJ Reader and Angela Blackson have done a good job pushing the pocket, that might really tip the scales in favor of me saying, wow, okay, this Texans team way more well-rounded than I thought they were.
Yeah, and I guess not to invoke, I know every time we invoke Clowney's name, people are going to be like, stop talking about Clowney.
Yeah.
I'm only bringing it up because you just brought up some names that are essentially going to be filling a void that's been left behind by Clowney. And Bill O'Brien is going to be judged as a general manager by the moves he made on that Saturday before the season started. Those
right.
are his final. The Laremy Tunsil and Jadeveon Clowney trades are his final exam, so to speak, in terms of how much they're going to count with respect to roster building during the year, barring something unforeseen. He can never get back the fact that he gave Clowney away for way less than he should have given him away for. What he can have happen is for he and Romeo Crennel to put a defense together this season that winds up being a better defense than the one Clowney
right,
played on
because,
last year.
Because maybe it's more complete. Now, right. And again, part of it too, and I'm sorry, I actually genuinely apologize to people when we have to go back and revisit this stuff. But you do have to point out that Brian Gain was fired for some of those things that didn't happen. Can I completely blame Bill O'Brien for not getting best market value for Jadeveon Clowney when really Brian Gain was the guy that should have done that before
the draft?
Right, before the draft. If you look at Frank Clark was traded for a really good hefty price. The Seahawks put it on notice to the entire league. Hey, we're open to trading Frank Clark. The Texans tentatively and cautiously talked to 10 teams. That's a whole different deal. So when Brian Gain was in charge, and I'm not blaming Brian Gain, he was working for Bill O'Brien at that point in my mind. But everything's a little bit murkier. So you get what you have right now, which is whatever. Clowney's not here. Can you replace the pass rush and improve it at all by having more total pass mm-hmm. rushers? Brian Gain drafted these guys, drafted him anywho. And then Bill O'Brien brought in Jacob Martin. The other side of it, too, would be, okay, is Lonnie Johnson going to become a viable and dependable cornerback over the course of a season? Because you've got film on him now. Teams are starting to get to see what is he good at, what is he bad at, where can we expose him? This next few weeks is going to tell a lot about Lonnie Johnson and just how much they can trust him.
What do you think of Lonnie Johnson?
I really like it when he's playing press man and he can use his body physically and everything. I need to start seeing, okay, how is he in zone? How are teams when they start looking at route combinations against him? Like, how much can they upend him and make him look like a rookie? I like Roby a lot so far. And
I do too.
If they had one extra dependable cornerback, I'd feel really, really good about it. And so that's one of the big question marks right now.
I just feel like they win this game, they're 2-1 on the season. And Deshaun Watson, now granted, it's a dicey thing with protecting him and keeping him from getting hit. Every assessment you have of the Texans comes with the caveat that Deshaun Watson has to stay healthy, of course. He's light years better than the other quarterback. Over a 16-game season, Minshew was actually better in the game last week than Deshaun was. Over a 16-game season, all 32 teams would take Deshaun Watson, obviously, over Gardner Minshew. He's light years ahead of Brissett, Minshew, eventually Foles when Foles comes back, and certainly light years ahead of whatever the Tennessee Titans are going to be trotting out there.
Now, I'd say with Deshaun last week, one of our listeners brought this up early in the week, and we didn't really explore it, but he was off target more so than typical. Every quarterback's kind of going to be, because when he was off target, he was really off target a few times on Sunday's game.
Yeah.
I wonder if his butt bruise is affecting his motion at all. I was trying to look and see if he was moving any differently. Yeah. I don't think he was, but for him to be that off target, I just wonder. It wasn't like it was. There weren't weather conditions.
Have you suffered a butt bruise before?
I've had deep thigh bruise. Deep thigh bruises are rough. The worst thing about a deep thigh bruise is there's no excuse. Like it's the most painful injury that you could definitely not miss time for. Like you shouldn't miss time with it, even though it hurts like somebody's hitting you with a baseball bat. So if his butt bruise is as bad as that, it feels like somebody's hitting you with a baseball bat every time you take a step, then I could see how it might affect
him. Could affect his torque.
Yeah.
You know, he steps into throws. Yeah. Maybe so. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. We were talking in the previous segment about how offensive linemen and defensive linemen trick each other with their eyes sometimes when there's mobile quarterbacks back there. And you said that was something you used to do. The cage year you got as an older player, you did that. Text message, Seth, if you had Adam Gase's eyes, you would have had 15 sacks a year. It's a good point.
Hey, man, that's messed up, dude.
I think you would have just scared people. Like, it wouldn't be because they'd have been like, boy, the offensive lineman wouldn't have been looking at your eyes going, oh, man, I wonder if my quarterback's scrambling to the left or right.
Yeah.
They would have just backed away because they're like, this is one crazy bleeper right there.
You know what I did a lot?
Go ahead. You can have my guy.
You know what I did a lot?
Stop looking at me like that.
You know what I did a lot that I think kind of freaked out some offensive linemen is I grunted a lot, like made almost kung fu sounds. Because I had read in this book when I was younger that it actually makes you stronger when you grunt, like when you do the hi-ya, or when you grunt when you listen.
Some of those women tennis players.
Well, no, and it's true. They've done studies since then that back it up. That it increases your strength when you grunt. And so I guess from an early age, I grunted a lot. But apparently it was almost, there was a certain variety, almost like I had bird calls of my own or something.
I thought you were going to say you peed on yourself during games.
No, I didn't do that.
Travis Johnson did.
Yeah, I know. Travis did, and like Mark Schlereth is famous for doing that, for peeing on himself.
Peeing on himself?
It's not that hard. I never got it because they're usually in every stadium, there are bathrooms right up in the tunnel. And you just run when there's a TV timeout. You can do it in time. Or you just pee into a cup on the sideline. Now they have tents. Guys will go into the medical tent now to do it.
Yeah, but I think, and I know you know this, I think Travis did it so that people wouldn't want to touch him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, because he like, wouldn't. It's not like, why would the opponent know that he had peed? You can't tell.
He could just go, you may not want to touch me. Look at me. I peed on myself.
Yeah, but no offensive lineman is holding the legs. It's not like you're, oh, like, I'm going to watch, know, I'm going to stop you by tackling your leg. That always gets called. Last night, there were a lot of bogus penalties.
Yeah.
But by the way, 60-some percent increase in holding penalties so far this year. You would think, hey, Seth, you're a defensive player. That's awesome, right? Man, I'm not so sure.
You're a fan now. Some of these, sucks to watch.
Yeah. Well, in some of those holds last night, if I were if I were a coach and I saw my defensive player was complaining about getting held on some of those plays, I'd be like, well, just beat him. Like, use your hands. There's times where as a defensive player, getting held isn't an excuse if it's something that's not egregious. Because what you should do is, like, that's enough of a – that player is holding you because all you need to do is arm chop and you'd get free and make the play. So do that. Quit whining about it to the refs. And, yeah, there were some sketchy, sketchy calls last night.
Did you see Tom Brady tweeting about the sketchy
calls?
Yeah, was he pandering, or do you think he really felt that way?
Well, you know the way to tell is because he said, I'm not watching this game anymore because of all these. Did he tweet, like, something about the game in the second half after that? A lot of times people
probably.
A lot of times we'll get that on the text line. Like, I'm never listening again. And then, like, 2 hours later.
Same numbers.
Hey, what do you guys think? Yeah, but you made that point about Deshaun Watson.
Right, thanks, Seth. Everyone's going to be grunting at the gym now. That's
message. I don't judge people for grunting at the gym. I don't do it at public gyms out of just embarrassment. I don't like calling attention to myself, which might surprise people. I don't.
I know you.
Yeah, I hate it.
I'm with you. You don't like calling attention.
I don't like that at all. But so in public gyms, I don't do it. But back in like the football gym, I was screaming. I was a screaming mess.
Were you?
Yeah. Hmm.
Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So the Astros get going again tonight. Man, it's a good thing they didn't have a game last night. That might have been the first indoor game to ever get rained out if they had to play last night.
They've had those issues. I don't know. By the time...
Actually, what am I saying? They had games canceled because of Harvey. What am I saying?
Yeah.
Or moved.
And they have earlier this season, we had some of the leakage issues out there over
the
right
roof.
Field.
Yeah.
But by the time the game would have been played last night, it wasn't raining all that hard.
It wasn't.
I bet it would have been just fine.
Maybe so.
It feels like they've been off for 2 weeks now because they took 24 hours off.
They're
back, baby.
Yeah, because they're fun to watch play right now. They're a really good baseball team. They have the best record in baseball. And things are winding down. So there's not a lot to nitpick with on this team, Seth.
I'm sick of their attitudes. They're arrogant. That's what they are.
Is that?
Yeah.
You can't go into the postseason as arrogant.
That's right.
As the Astros
yeah. These
are
guys
into.
Aren't taking the. They're not honoring the game. Yeah. That's what they're not doing. They're making it look too easy.
Okay.
I'm sick of these guys making it look too easy. They need to honor the game by making it look harder.
Yeah. They need to grunt more.
Yeah. That's right.
They need to grunt more.
I need more faces. Stop having so much fun in the dugout.
Right.
Stop sick of this club Astros nonsense.
More frowns. More grunting.
All those things that I was grumpy about before. You actually won a World Series. I'm still grumpy about.
That's right.
No team that has a nightclub in their a discotheque in their locker room.
Do they that still? I feel like they kind of outgrew that.
You hear them reference it every now and then, but it's just not the big thing. I think it must only be when the movement hits them. Like, it is just kind of because you hear the music and everything, but it's not like the full nightclub.
You remember how big a deal Club Astros was? Like, this is back before they were winning a World Series.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like once you win a World Series, then all that stuff, you don't need cute things like that anymore.
I don't know.
Your cute thing is winning 103 games and making deep runs in the postseason.
But that was also
back then. They hadn't been to the postseason in like a decade.
I wonder what Verlander. Because Club Astros had kind of been retired by the time that Verlander got it. They got retired. Club Astros wasn't an every night and every win occurrence. I think part of it is when you just start winning so much.
Yeah.
It's just, it probably gets it.
Feels
gets,
good.
It starts to feel like a, it starts to feel like a chore.
Yeah.
Instead of an actual celebration.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe that'll be our hot take Astros storyline. Has winning become too big a burden for the Astros? Jay Kaplan put together the three Astros storylines for the rest of the season, and I tend to agree with these in terms of what the biggest things that need to get sort of shored up between now and the beginning of the playoffs. Carlos Correa's health, and they're all health related. They're basically yeah. Carlos Correa, Ryan Presley, and Brad Peacock. There's not a hole on this team that you look at. First of all, they wouldn't be able to fix it anyways, even if there were a hole on this team.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a hole on this team where you go, okay, well, here's the thing that they're assuming Presley and Peacock are healthy.
Right, that's the big.
Because assuming they're healthy, there's no real Achilles heel on this team.
But those are huge ifs. Because and Presley is the one that at least seems, it seems like his injury is more. It's more reasonable to expect that his surgery and subsequent recovery will be more straightforward. Where with Peacock, he's had issues with this three times now, and it seems like they've tried to press through it enough times.
And it's a shoulder, right?
Yeah, and it's a shoulder.
Yeah.
So is Peacock, are you even going to get anything out of him in the postseason? There's still a huge question mark with there. Presley, they're going to roll him out there, and it's a matter of just, okay, how good is he going to look and how long can he last?
Yeah. How much are you expecting from Carlos Correa in the postseason?
Not a whole lot at this point, just because generally, when he comes back from an extended layoff, he takes a little while to get back into it.
Yeah.
So it's not an anti-Correa take or anything like that. It's just a simple, he didn't look like he knew where the strike zone was the last time. He said it, he joked about it afterwards, that he didn't have a good eye the last time he got up. It's going to take him a little while to get back into it. Will he get back into it by the time the postseason rolls around?
Well, here's how they're handling him for the rest of the year. You
yeah.
Ready? He returned to the lineup on Tuesday night. He had a scheduled off day on Wednesday. They didn't play on Thursday. He's scheduled to play tonight and tomorrow, and then he's going to be off again on Sunday. The team has a day off on Monday, and then there's six games left after that, and it's unclear whether he'll play four, five, or all six. I'm with you. Have him play all six. Do whatever he can to get his timing back.
Well, but it's a back. It's a back injury. I don't know. Just throwing him back out there, and it's not sink or swim on this.
How many days he'll have had off by then, though? Yeah. Okay, maybe five.
It's better. It's more important for his back to feel healthy. The number one thing is that his back needs to stay healthy. So if you tax him too much and you go out and, okay, he gets his eye back after three or four games, but then he tweaks his back again, that's it. He's done.
Yeah.
You know, if he tweaks it, that's it. In my mind, there's no room for error here. They have to be most careful about that above all else.
Yeah.
But then you're right. Then you're throwing him into all of a sudden, oh, he's getting right in the divisional round of the playoffs. And can you afford to use the divisional round of the playoffs to get him right?
Yeah. For me, at this point, Correa is just gravy at this point. Whatever you get out of Carlos Correa, if you get a 2017 Carlos Correa, in 2019 in the postseason, you're laughing at this point. I'm not expecting big things from Carlos Correa in the postseason, and I'm not that nervous about it, to be honest with you.
The thing is, you have all these other guys that are going to be on the playoff roster that are options.
Yeah.
I think that
it's a deeper team.
You know, it
now.
Doesn't have to be Tucker for Reddick.
Right.
It can be Tucker for Correa at times. You've got Yordan, obviously. So it's just, you don't want to get arrogant about it. Even though I was just sarcastically accusing the Astros of being arrogant. You don't want to be arrogant about it, but as a fan, I feel a little bit arrogant. I feel a little bit of like, yeah, look at our lineup. Yeah, so fine, take any one of them out of there and whatever. What are you going to do about it?
I just think it's analysis.
Yeah.
I think that's just, to me, that's just factual data as opposed to arrogance.
What are you going to do about it? That's my analysis.
That's right. Yeah. And say it like that fans. That would be even more insulting if you did it in a fake New York accent.
What are you going
to
do about it?
Right.
Come at me, bro.
Say that to any
Forget about
Yankee
it. You're
going to
argue in a lineup. Forget
right.
about it.
Yeah.
What are you going to say? All I know of Aaron Judge when he shows up at Minute Maid is he's scared. He's terrified of our measly little low right field wall.
It is.
That comes up to his waist. That when he approaches that wall, he's like, my shoulder. I'm a big strapping man who's terrified of my shoulder injury. Yeah, whatever. Was it his shoulder?
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. Me, the most compelling Astros storyline down the stretch is the Cole v. Verlander for the American League Cy Young. These two in September. You ready for the numbers in September on both of these guys? This is from Jeff Passan. Verlander, 28 innings pitched, 13 hits, 4 earned runs, 40 strikeouts. Cole, 29 innings pitched, 12 hits, 3 earned runs, 49 strikeouts. Cole, statistically, has been the better pitcher in September. I just think that no-hitter is what's going to seal it for Verlander.
Yeah,
that felt like a finishing move right there.
The third no-hitter and go for I don't.
Koufax and Nolan Ryan are the only two ahead of him.
What are the odds saying right now?
About the Cy Young Awards?
Yeah, the odds have that Verlander up there. And what are the odds saying about
Bregman? It's Verlander and Cole and nobody else.
What are the odds saying about Bregman versus Trout? This is going to be
That's my project for the week.
Bregman versus Trout turns into the classic, boy, MVP argument where everybody has a different definition of what valuable means.
Yeah.
And people are going to get irate about this. People are going to get really upset about the Trout versus Bregman argument. And they're not even going to think they're going to be, but they're going to get into a discussion. And one guy's going to start saying, like, no, war above all else. Because Trout's got the better war. He's worth one more win than Bregman, despite playing in fewer games.
Right.
And then with Bregman, it's going to go to, hey, this guy produced on a much, much better baseball team with a whole lot more pressure on him.
This is as of September 2nd. So this is a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Verlander minus 300 to win the AL Cy Young. Gerrit Cole plus 200. Minus 300 means you got to risk $300 to win 100. Yeah. Gerrit Cole, you risk 100 to win 200. Yeah. So it's a pretty big gap.
And that was before the no-hitter.
I think it was before the no-hitter. Boy, what day was the no-hitter? It was on a weekend. I remember that. The bottom line is they've had almost identical stats since the beginning of September, and Verlander was a heavy favorite at the beginning of September. Verlander's going to win it.
Would you feel differently about it? I feel like the emotional favorite is Verlander, too. But I also want Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole got close once and hasn't been back since, 2015. I'd like him to get it. But if I didn't know he was likely going to be gone next year, I think I'd feel more strongly about it. There's part of it where, Cole's going to be gone, so you know what? Give the guy that's going to be stick around.
Verlander's no hitter was on September 1st.
And when are these odds from?
These odds are from September 2nd.
Oh, okay.
So it was the day after.
That's when he took the leap. That would make sense to be the day
where you adjust them.
Yeah. So that would be. Then it makes sense that you're thinking that that's the go ahead. Right
Yep. So there you go, Justin. And you know what? Justin Verlander is the one guy that I know is going to be here for two more years. Gerrit Cole may be a mercenary and a soldier of fortune and just leave and go somewhere else.
Let me give you a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Okay. So Verlander, they're doing load management right now. Right. Hit a fewest number of pitches he had in the total outing when he came out the other night.
Yep.
What do they do if they get to his pitch count limit and he's throwing a no-hitter right now?
They leave him in.
They do?
They leave him in, yeah.
Even with a load management?
He's chasing history. When he's going, yeah. If you're going after a no-hitter, he's chasing Sandy Koufax.
Okay.
You leave him in.
All right.
Yep.
I care about championships, but whatever, Sean, whatever floats your boat.
No, I care about awards and stats.
I've seen, I don't see the Astros go the way of the Golden State Warriors when they're going after the regular season win record.
I care about granular 10th place MVP votes. That's what I care about. Yeah. That's my thing. That's my deal. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. We'll do some headlines in about 10 minutes or so. Ron Rivera, head coach of the Carolina Panthers. It looks like he's going to be operating with Kyle Allen under center.
Finally,
his plans
are coming to fruition.
A battle of former Kevin Sumlin transfers taking place this weekend. Kyle Allen versus Kyler Murray. They were on the same depth chart back in the day.
Was Kyle Allen the one that tweeted about Sumlin?
I don't know if he did or not.
Or who was it? I can't remember which quarterback it was.
Yeah.
Which disgruntled Kevin Sumlin quarterbacky. Yeah.
Not sure. There are a few of them out there. Kyle Allen looks like, we'll find out. Ron Rivera was asked, basically peppered with questions about Cam Newton at his press conference, at Rivera's press conference yesterday, tried to keep steering the conversation towards the Arizona Cardinals. The Carolina media was having none of it. So eventually Ron Rivera said, I'm having none of this, and walked out.
Would you think Cam would travel in either event, or would that be decided tomorrow?
See, you guys want to watch, sit there and watch, so you'll have to wait and see. I'm not going to talk about it anymore, guys. I mean, let's talk about it, Arizona. I mean, I haven't really talked about Arizona, so it'd be good to answer those kind of questions.
Cam, though.
I know it's about Cam, but we won't. I don't know any more until tomorrow. So let's just, let's talk about Arizona. If not, there's no reason for me to stand here.
Before the opener, you were 100% confident he was going to be ready to go. Where are you on that level now?
I just asked you to ask me questions about somebody else. I'm not going to do this anymore, okay? I told you, I won't know anything until tomorrow. Okay? Thank you.
Golly. All right, so, I like the golly. That's my favorite.
And it looks a lot dorkier when you transcribe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he says it, because I was transcribing it on here, and I'm going, it looks, if you read it, you look at it, he goes, golly.
Golly.
Right. Like, but he's like, golly.
Yeah, like it's like Andy Griffith saying it or something.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a difference between frustrated golly and golly.
Yeah, it's a golly when you're definitely trying to say something different.
Yeah.
Like he's a guy that Ron Rivera was trying to, he would like to rather use an MF or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He would have liked to have. Well, if you noticed, he was getting further and further away. Great job by Jonesy of turning up the audio there. The reason it sounded more and more hollow as the cut went on. It's because Rivera was basically walking out of the room as he was saying those things. He just left.
I'm going to back him up there because when it comes to an injury situation, and is your quarterback going to play? I think it's within every coach's right, and he should be as cryptic as possible about it. And I don't know, how many times does a man have to say no before they actually accept the no?
But were they asking the same question over and over again?
I think they were asking questions related to his health, right? I think he had flat out said, I'm not going to answer any questions about Cam Newton's health. So I guess at some point when you realize that, okay, every single question is going to be, he should just sit up there and just keep saying, not going to talk about it, not going to talk about it.
I guess, here's the thing, is that he was at one point just trying to steer everybody over to the Arizona thing. And yeah. I look at this and I'm like, dude, nobody cares about this Arizona game.
He should deliver.
If you don't have Cam Newton, then the Arizona game nor any of these other games matter. You're 0-2 right now with Cam Newton. It ain't going to get any better without Cam Newton, I wouldn't think.
I think sometimes it's like with Bill O'Brien with the clock management thing. If you have a little bit of a prepared statement, at least you can keep referring back to the statement. Belichick does that. Belichick, he'll continue on and soldier on with a press conference, but he'll keep saying, well, I said everything I'm going to say. And then you have that. You say, look, we've thought about this. This is everything we're willing to divulge at this moment, and you're just going to have to take what you want from the statement.
They did that with the Caserio tampering charges. Remember Cal McNair put out a statement?
No,
it wasn't the tampering charges. It was the firing of Brian Gain.
Okay, yeah.
And they put out the statement that we did an overall evaluation of the organization, and O'Brien multiple times pointed back to
the statement. Yeah, like it's the Magna Carta or something. Right. You say, we have this document and we're beholden to it. And it's our Bill of Rights.
Take it up with the League of Nations, guys.
You're going to need a 3/4 vote by the Senate to overturn
this
one.
Right.
This is just what we have here. So, no, and honestly, that's what they need to do. That's a simple statement. And it's crazy the way it works because people accept that. Even though they're not happy about it, it's almost because if you give humans a rule, they'll largely abide by the rule until they really think about it. So the statement might be inadequate. It could be a wholly inadequate statement, but as long as you have the statement to refer back to, it's an easy out.
You know what the statement is in this case? The injury report.
Right, right.
Point to the injury report.
Look, we have the injury report, and frankly, that's all the league requires us to put out, and that's all we're willing to put out.
He's limited right now, and I'll give you more tomorrow.
I wonder if I have sympathy for coaches doing these press conferences because think about this. I think for most of them, isn't it fair to say that this is their least favorite part of the day? And so
the press conference?
Yeah, and it's now if somebody were to put cameras on you during your favorite part of the day, I don't know what your least favorite part. Maybe you're constipated. That's going to be your least favorite part of the day when you're going to try to
Wouldn't want cameras on me
on you
I'm
when
constipated.
You're doing that. And like ironically, now it's the cameras themselves that are making it the worst part of your day here with the press conference. But they spend coaches love coaching in the NFL as opposed to college because in the NFL, for the most part, it's way more about football.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about kids' grades.
Oh.
You don't have to worry about recruiting.
Fundraising.
You don't have parents calling you. Yeah. I mean, in the NFL, for the most part, unless it's a superstar.
It's all ball.
As a quarterback or something, a parent calls you as an NFL coach. You're like, all right, I'm going to cut this kid's ass.
Yeah.
You're calling about your adult son.
Right.
So the you don't have to worry about all that. The one part of their day where it's not about football is when they have to go up and stand up and answer questions.
Yeah.
Some of which are asinine at times.
They are.
And I understand why they're grumpy. But at the same time, I would say if I had one part of my day that I knew was going to suck, I would get myself ready for it. I'm a football coach.
By drinking how much?
Yeah. I'm a football coach. And that would be a great way to do it. I'm a football coach who preaches preparation. Right. The five P's. Is it five? Proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. Six.
Six.
The six P's. It used to be five P's. I had a special teams coach that added the piss poor instead of just poor.
I like
poor.
That. It makes it a little more emphatic.
So just with a modicum of preparation, you can go in there and be prepared. So I feel like Ron Rivera wasn't properly prepared.
You know
for
what this reminded me of, Seth? The fact that he only wanted to talk about Arizona. He didn't want to talk about Cam Newton when everybody there wanted to talk about Cam Newton. Back in the day when I was doing radio with John Harris on our previous station, we used to, during the summer months, book like B and C list celebrities to come on the show from the 80s, like from old 80s movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we had like the guy who played Damone on Fast Times at Ridgemont High. We had Billy Zabka from The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Well, he's back again.
I feel like that's something we could reprise on this show. But at any rate, we approached Mia Sara. Actually, it was Cody Stutes was our intern at the time, approached Mia Sara.
Who's that?
She played Sloane Peterson on Ferris Sloan? Bueller's Day Off.
Okay, yeah.
Pretty hot back in the day.
Yeah.
Her agent got back to Cody and said, Mia will be happy to come on your show as long as you don't ask any questions about Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
That's what Ron Rivera was yesterday. He's like, hey, don't ask questions about Cam Newton. Nobody gives a crap about anything but Cam Newton, Ron. Mm-hmm. I hate to tell you. And Mia Sara, I hate to tell you, I can't name one other movie that you were in other than Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
What is she thinking? Like, don't. That's why I always admire celebrities who had that one huge hit who come on and say, no, I understand the deal.
They embrace it.
I embrace it. The reason you're talking to me today is because of that, of course. And they're happy to get a couple little shout-outs in at the end about their current project.
Yeah, and dude, you know what? If you do that and you embrace it, you will sit at Comic-Cons making $5,000 a week for the rest of your life.
Yeah, Mia Sara should be dressed as Sloane Peterson every day of her life.
She should.
She should walk around with shoulder pads and
grow her hair long again.
Yeah.
She cut her hair short. What are you doing?
Man, I don't know.
Embrace the look.
You know,
Jonesy says she's in Time Cop. Oh, that's right. What's Time Cop?
Yeah. Is that a Schwarzenegger?
Is that a good movie?
Vehicle?
Huh?
Oh, with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, that's not helping. I know who he is, but that's not helping. Oh, yeah, that movie that I didn't see with Jean-Claude Van Damme. So anyways, Ron Rivera, you're being a little Mia Sara-ish in your press conference.
So Cam's, what do you expect to happen with Cam after this year?
I only care what happens with him in week four, quite honestly.
Well, what if he ends up on IR again? What if he ends up on IR?
Is he the next guy who could retire early? He's suffered as much injury as Andrew Luck did.
I feel like you have to start planning for his replacement. I think they have to draft a quarterback. But now, I was listening to Andrew Brandt, who was the GM for the Packers when Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers were both there. And he was talking about how unpleasant a situation it was. And Brandt understood it. He said Aaron Rodgers was clamoring to start. And Brett Favre, his people are saying, it's not fun going to work every day and sitting next to the guy they want to replace you with. So I don't know. Cam doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that would just take it real easy when they draft a quarterback in the first round.
Are you kidding
me? Hey, Cam, why don't you help this kid be better?
Have you seen one press conference where Cam Newton looks happy for any reason?
And I'm not saying that's not even an anti-Cam thing. Like, obviously, Brett Favre was a great quarterback. He did not like Cam Newton. The thing about a lot of great quarterbacks is they've got huge egos.
Yeah,
Nothing wrong with that. It's like being a pitcher. You got to have a huge ego. Some guys mask it better than others.
Part of why they're great.
Yeah.
Let's do some headlines.
Shotgun. Minshew looking for it all. Floats it to the left side. It is caught. DJ Chark in the end zone. Touchdown, Jaguars. Minshew puts it exactly where it needed to be. A 24-yard strike. And Jacksonville adds to its lead.
There you go. Minshew to Chark. The Titans did some favors for the Jags early in that game with a Dory Jackson fumble on a punt return. And it was all downhill from there for Tennessee after that. That was just the opening the Jags needed to get an early lead and cruise to a 20-7 win over the Titans.
Can I tell you the most impressive part, the second most impressive part of that game for me, after Gardner Minshew and DJ Chark's performance? DJ Chark is really, he's been a consistent performer so far.
This made plays in all three games so
far. Second rounder last year. I think he's like 10th or 11th in fantasy points right now. Well, he's higher because of game three. After week two, I think he was 10th or 11th, yeah. And then we'll see after the rest of the week three comes in. Second most impressive part, Adoree Jackson, after that fumble, goes to the sideline.
Oh, yeah.
Vrabel's talking to him, and Adoree Jackson, it was like he was a Marine, standing there making steady eye contact, like accepting full responsibility for his mistake.
For basically losing the game
It made me like Adoree Jackson a lot. I was like, holy crap, that's a coachable dude right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Good job, Adoree Jackson, even though you screwed your team up.
Even though you opened the door to losing an important division game.
Titans gave up 9 sacks. 9 sacks, half of which could have been avoided by Marcus Mariota. Why are people insisting on telling me that Marcus Mariota is playing well this year? And this was before last night's game.
Because they beat the Browns in the first game of the year.
Okay.
And they beat them by 30 points, even though there were a couple pick sixes and they ran the score up in the fourth quarter. And the Browns were the most hyped team coming into the season.
Yeah.
Marcus Mariota stinks. He stinks. He's closer to getting replaced than anything else.
He had over 300 yards for the first time since like December of last year, and it was in garbage time.
In a 13-point loss. Yeah.
8 back in coverage for Houston. McMillan launches down the middle for McCleskey, and it breaks free! Jalen McCleskey!
Oh, that was a painful one for the University of Houston Cougars. A game that they took a 28-7 lead in the first half. And then that was pretty much it for the rest of the night for the offense for the Cougs. De'Ara King, really good in the first half. Not so much in the second half. Finished 16-33 for 229 yards. Did rush for over 100 yards. But that touchdown that you heard was a complete, complete gaffe by the Houston secondary. Now, it would have put Tulane in position to kick a game-winning field goal if they had tackled the guy. But instead, the guy got loose. Tulane, game-winning touchdown. They win 38-31, and the Cougs fall to 1-3 on the season. And thus, Seth, finish up one of the tougher stretches I've seen a college football team have to endure. 4 games in 19 days to open the season.
4 games in 19 days, including one versus obviously one of the best teams in the nation. Tell me if I'm soft for having this opinion. The fact that I believe Dana Holgorsen is in it for the long run makes me feel like, okay, this team's better than 1-3, but I'm cool with it because however they end up finishing this season, Holgorsen's laying the groundwork. I fully believe they're going to be a better season in the second, or better team in the second half of the season than they were in the first half of the season. And I would handle it with relative ease and stride. Obviously, I'm a senior on that team. That doesn't make me feel any better. But
I don't sense a lot of panic among Coug fans because of what you just said.
Yeah.
He's not Herman, which means that losing a couple games like this would hasten his exit out to just go get a better job. And he's not Major Applewhite or Tony Levine, where Coug fans have been spending an offseason trying to talk themselves into the guy, and you're showing signs that, man, this may not be the guy. Dana is going to be here for the long haul. And that's a tough early stretch of games. Tulane is actually no pushover anymore. That's not they were favored in that game last night, Tulane was, by 5 points. So that was a rough beat if you were catching 5 points with the Cougs. You thought, well, at least I'm going to win my bet. They'll kick a game-winning field goal. Not so fast, my friends. They gave up that touchdown. Cougs lose 38-31. The Astros, not in action last night. However,
text line has already said that it's a way soft take. So, by me.
Really?
Yeah. I've been judged that quickly.
A lot of people soft on the text line? Okay. I think you opened the door by welcoming people calling you soft. That's my sense on that. The Astros are back in action tonight. They are home. Their final home stretch of the season is taking place starting tonight with the Angels are coming to town, right? The Troutless Angels coming to town? Yes, there we go. The Mike Troutless Anaheim, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim coming to town to take on the Astros.
This is where,
the battle of their lives for home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
This is where Bregman needs to seize the day and win the MVP bout by in a series versus a team that doesn't have Mike Trout, because he just said, screw it anyway, and went and got his surgery. Just go ahead and go off and show in Trout's absence. He's not even there. This could have been the head-to-head matchup between Trout and Bregman.
They played again next week,
right. This could have been really for all the marbles for the MVP. Trout just ducked right the hell out.
He did. He backed out.
Look, the most important ability is availability.
That's right.
As people have told me.
Especially when it comes to the MVP award.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the narrative we're going with this
year. No. I think there is something to that. That part of your value as a player is actually being there. I think people discount attendance way too much in these things. When you're the best player on one of the best players on your team, you actually being there and helping them win more baseball games is one of the valuable things you do.
Is there a player who gets more marquee love than Mike Trout for having played in as few important games as he's played in his career? Like, Trout is generally thought, like, he is the consensus best player in baseball. He is the gold standard. The guys, can you name one important Mike Trout moment in his career?
Like, if he all of a sudden, what if Trout actually sucks in the playoffs or something?
We'll never know because they don't ever make
the playoffs. Right, that's what I mean. You don't know. He wouldn't have the issue that, what's his name, the pitcher does, where he's just incredible in the regular season.
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, he doesn't have the Clayton Kershaw effect. Right. Who knows? Oh, that'd be awesome if he. I mean, it wouldn't be awesome if he did, but
if he sucked in the playoffs.
Yeah, if all of a sudden
it'd be
Angels.
Awesome if he did, because the Astros are in the American League.
What if the Angels get good and then every year they have a first round exit and Trout goes over the whole time?
You know what? It would kill some of his mystique.
Yeah,
the best thing to happen to him maybe not making the playoffs.
But I think there's something to be said for Bregman doing it under pressure.
Yeah.
Bregman doing it under the pressure of being the team that's got a target on their back the entire season.
And even right now, they're a half game ahead of the Yankees and two games ahead of the Dodgers, so they still have a target on their back. All right, there it is. Alex Bregman, MVP. Boom. Those are headlines for you right there.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.